Welcome to our Erasmus podcast. I'm sitting here with Mr. Tomek Jaremowicz, who spent 2 weeks...
Hello, everyone. And we are sitting with Victoria.
And you spent 2 weeks in Florence on an Erasmus exchange. And I wanted to ask you, because you did two courses. So one of them was on resilience and well-being, and one of them was on stress management. So they seem to be quite related to each other. And I was wondering if you could tell us something about both the courses. What were they about, essentially?
Yeah, so those two courses concerned psychological well-being. And I liked better the first one because it was more concrete and it was both theory and practice. And the other one was not that substantial, and I don't think there was a lot of content in it. Mm-hmm. However, they both represented a kind of a paradigm shift when it comes to psychology, something that we called positive psychology. Because until the development of positive psychology, psychologists had usually asked the question, what is wrong with you? Whereas with positive psychology, they started asking a question, what is right with you? Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to research happy people in order to find out what the secret is there, right? And so, they did a lot of surveys in order to find out, so what is it that they do right, okay? And so they later, after this research, they developed a lot of tools to help both people who suffered from anxiety or other disorders, mm-hmm. but also to kind of provide those tools to those people who were already pretty happy, but so that they could maintain their happiness. Because I think that the most important takeaway from those two courses is that happiness is something that you need to earn, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not something, like, obviously genes matter, and also what life brings, right? Sometimes it brings chocolate, sometimes it brings rotten tomatoes, for example. but it's very important, about like 40%, how you interpret it and what you do with it, mm-hmm. right? So yes, I think that this is the most important takeaway. That you have to earn to be happy. You mm-hmm. have to earn it. So when it comes to resilience, I have this a nice definition. So it says here that, and full disclosure, I'm reading it from the screen, that resilience is having the ability to cope with and adapt to new situations. But if you were to use a normal language, basically it would mean that you it's the ability to bounce back after something bad or dramatic happens in your life. Mm-hmm. And resilience is both useful in your personal life, but also in your working life. And it's both, because those two courses were basically for teachers. Mm-hmm. So obviously resilience is very important when you're a teacher, but also those courses, their purpose was to provide teachers with some tools to transfer also to their students.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds useful.
Yes. Resilience and well-being. Okay, so that was the first course. And when it comes to well-being, it was also the whole idea of well-being also is kind of connected to this paradigm shift, because it used to be like this, that well-being was considered just lack of sickness or lack of disease. But now they kind of understand that there is so much more to well-being, right? Like having a good work balance, for example, having good relationships, mm-hmm. having meaning in your life and a purpose, having some achievements, and so on and so forth. Like also kind of becoming you, like to kind of use kind of like an Aristotelian language, mm-hmm. To become who you were meant to become, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, of course.
I notice, especially with my students, that when I ask them, what you are good at, they usually struggle, right? They don't really know what they're good at. So I remember at this course, so the woman who ran this course, she was half Mexican, half Italian, and she came to Italy for a variety of reasons. But anyway, she was an excellent teacher because she was very energetic. She had lots of ideas, and she was always smiling, very positive. And she was she is a psychologist and a therapist. So she asked us to do the survey that was supposed to tell us what our strengths are. And this is very important because very often, especially it's something that school, I think, encourages, that you should first of all work on something that you are bad at, right? But psychologists actually say that you should work and you should cultivate and develop things that you are good at, right? So, sometimes it's okay to have three, like at biology, if you're not that much interested, but it's maybe you're good at something else. Mm-hmm. So you should work on this, right?
It's definitely our job as teachers to make our students aware of the things that they're good at as well,
yes.
So that they, or at least help them to reflect themselves on what
yes.
it is that they're actually good at, and to be able to say it confidently and not just shy away from,
right.
Oh, I mustn't say I'm good at something, because that's kind of
it's
sometimes
like false
culture.
Modesty,
yes.
Right? And modesty will never get you far in this modern world, right? Okay, so also I found the most important thing about well-being. Okay, there are many important things, but this whole idea of mindfulness, and I know that a lot of people know about mindfulness. Simply put, it just means that you have to be present at a given moment, in which you kind of separate a little bit, you kind of are able to stand aside and just observe what you are doing, and this allows you to be in the present and not as usually people are either in the future, planning stuff or worrying about something, or in the past when they are thinking about bad memories. And it's very important, and also it helps with well-being, because if you're not mindful, then let's say that you encounter like a trigger that you interpret as your trigger, for example, you made me feel something, right? But it only tells you about your emotions, not really or that particularly about what the person actually said, and then you have almost immediate reaction. But if you actually use this mindfulness technique, then you stop and you kind of are in the present. You are aware of what is going on with you, right? And then instead of reaction, you have something, much more kind of responsible, irrational. So reaction tend changes into what our instructor said, response.
Yes.
And response is supposed to be,
something more controlled.
Yes, yeah, exactly, right. Mm-hmm. So something more controlled.
And how does that compare to emotional regulation? This mindfulness.
Yeah, it's a very good question, because without mindfulness, it's very hard to control yourself, right? So whether you're angry or whether you're anxious, there's always a way to kind of control your emotions, and it's I think it's especially difficult with anxiety, with anxiety, because you feel like your body is in the state of very heavy stress. You feel your heart beating, and sometimes you're sweating and you're shaken and so on and so forth, but you have to remind yourself that this is just natural response to stress, and it is and this is this mindfulness. Usually therapists say that if you feel anxious and feel a lot of anxiety, you should not do anything. Right? So you shouldn't open windows or start breathing deeply, because it only kind of confirms that there's something dangerous going on. So it just, so the best way, although it's very hard, the best way is just to, breathe normally, right? And then you will, sooner or later, probably sooner, if you don't do anything, you will calm yourself down and it's, you know, it's going to be okay, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to... So let's get back to resilience. As I said before, it's this ability to bounce back, right? But resilience has there's a lot of models of resilience, right? And one of the models is called 7 C's model of resilience. This is because there are, you know, 7 areas and they all start with C. So the first one is competence, so the ability to kind of discern what you are good at and feeling confident about what you can do and what you also cannot do. Then confidence, like self-confidence, right? But self-confident that is rooted in the evidence that you have from your past experience, right? So it's not like self-confidence happens over time, overnight. You have to actually work and also accept that sometimes you have to make a mistake, because, you know, without mistakes you're not going to learn anything. It's part of the process of learning, right? Then the next one is connections. So because you have to have a support group, right? So you need to have connections, like relations to your family, to your significant others, and colleagues at work, for example. Then character. Character refers to like the individual kind of conviction, individual conviction of right and wrong. Okay, so you have to have this kind of like a moral compass within you, which, you know, without it you can't really make informed decisions. Then contribution. So you need to have like a sense of purpose, both in work and in your life. So like this idea that, like, you work for something bigger, right? And not just, for example, for money, right? Then coping, when people learn to cope with stress, because, you know, sometimes you just get stressed and it's normal, but what's important is that you need to know how to do that. And also control, which is basically about understanding how you can control both your environment, of course, to a certain degree, but also your emotions. And so this is very important. Now it is very important for work, right? Because we actually devoted a lot of time to like work stress and burnout. And when it comes, so like stress at work is normal to some extent. Like I don't think there's. Is there any work that you don't stress at all? Can you think of anything?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah, because there are always some like demands.
There's
right?
always some kind of stress in personal life, work life.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the stress, right? So there are like 7 characterizations, right? So when it's just stress, so there is this over-engagement because you're constantly doing something, right? Then emotions are overactive because you work with your emotions and because you need to be motivated. And then stress produces urgency and hyperactivity, obvious. But after a while, there's this loss of energy because you can't really work like to the max all the time. Then it leads to anxiety disorders if it goes on for too long, right? But primary damage is usually physical. Okay, so for example, you have backaches, right? Because it needs to manifest somehow. On the other hand, there is burnout, and it has different characteristics. Well, first of all, disengagement, right? You stop caring. You don't really care. You go to work, but you were not able to cope, so you know you don't care. Then emotions are blunted, right? So you stop feeling normally. Produces helplessness and hopelessness. Loss of motivation leads to depression, and the last one is primary damage is emotional. And she actually said that burnout, unlike, for example, stress, can kill you. like in the long run, if you don't do anything with it, right? If you keep going to work and don't look for any help, right? So mm-hmm. this is like burnout is really, really dangerous.
But that's stress having gone too far,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Now, something that's very important is that, you know, when you are stressed, you kind of tend to think that you are like you are responsible for everything, mm-hmm. right? And then it, obviously it adds to stress. But she also talks about something that is called circles of concern, right? So she said that. So she drew like circles, right? And so in the middle was a circle that you actually are pretty much, you can be responsible, or at least you have some agency in it, right? So for example, how you talk about yourself and other people, right? The plans, routines you create, the choices and responses you make, how you challenge and reframe your thoughts, especially when those thoughts are kind of punishing you. Or for example, who you follow on Instagram, for example, how much you spend on social media, right? This is all under control. How much you sleep, for example. Because I didn't say about that, but there are certain things that people do that kind of make them prone to stress, like for example, lack of sleep, bad nourishment.
Like halt, isn't it? Hungry, yeah. Angry.
I didn't know that.
Lonely and tired. Those are kind of these fundamental yeah. things that you need to make sure that you look
yeah.
after.
Very good. Yeah, actually, yes. Uh-huh. Now, something. Now, the second circle is something that is kind of out of your reach, but still you have some influence. Like for example, the values and practices of the workplace, right? Like you don't really have a lot say in it, but you know there are some, you know, well at least there should be some roots of influence. How other people choose to interpret what we say and do, for example, you can also choose. Like obviously, first of all, you can to some degree influence how people think about you, but like at the end of the day, you don't really know what's going on in their head, right? So you have to kind of understand that it's totally outside of your control. Or for example, the economy, the traffic, right? And then there is the last area where you have basically no control. Like for example, like what country you live in, like how the country is governed. And you know, it's kind of trivial, but on the other hand, people spend so much complaining about things that are beyond their control, and it's kind of passive aggressive, right? Because complaining is basically passive aggressive. Usually people who complain, they feel helpless and hopeless, so the only thing that's left to them that is kind of a comfort is, you know, complaining. Right, so that's about when it comes to the first course. Now the second course was about stress management. It was more practical. So for example, we meditated a lot, which was pretty good. And now I had meditated before this course, but during this course I actually learned that, because I had always meditated without any input, right, without any guidance. But like during this course, I actually found that it is actually like it works really good when you actually listen to somebody, as long as this somebody is not that intrusive, right? If the person does not like actually talk too much, right? So meditation, but also mindfulness. So we went to this rose garden in Florence, and we were.
Lovely.
Yes. It was on the hill and you could see, you know, the whole city, right, including the cathedral. So we were supposed to, you know, walk in this garden and be mindful. There were some elements of yoga as well, because it does relax you. But also, you know, physical exercises, especially the stretching. Physical exercises, and there was also one thing. I can't remember what it was called, but it was very similar to Tai Chi. So like very slow movements with breathing. Oh, and also had breathing exercises, and especially the one that is called the box breathing, when you count like to four or five, so let's say to five, so you breathe in and you count five, then you hold five, breathe out five, and you hold five. And after you do something like that for like 10 minutes, then you feel, you know, much better, right? But she also talked about sleep. For example, if you want to sleep better, you should go out. Like the first thing you do in the morning is to go out and see the sun or natural light, because supposedly, like, it sets your circadian rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes you, you know, sleep better. Mm-hmm. So basically, that was it.
And something about then your time spent in Florence. So for meditation, it was particularly good to be able to go into the rose garden and have beautiful views. Yes. But what else on the actual courses is available?
Yeah. So it was 2 weeks, right? So there were different people in the first week and different people in the second week. So the first week there were people from Croatia, and you know we went for dinner with them. So it was really fun. It was really fun. And also, surprisingly, people from Aruba, and Aruba is in the Caribbean, and it was even like a bigger surprise. They actually speak Dutch, and this is a Dutch territory, so that was the reason why they were able to be there, because Erasmus is the European Union, and you know, the Netherlands is in the European Union, so they also, right? And you know, they were so nice, they even gave us presents. Like, for example, stuff from coconut, like sweets from coconut, and also a little bit of white rum, because they produce white rum there.
So a real cultural exchange.
And during the second course, we had Germans, Finnish people, two people from Sweden, and two people from Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. And we hung out a lot with Swedes. In the first course I met this colleague from Poland. Mm-hmm. She's from Krakow, and she's a psychologist in a school, right? And it so happened that she actually participated in both courses.
Okay, right? So you were both there for
them. Yeah, so we kind of bonded. We went to Paris, and this Swedish guy, he also was like a drummer, and he really liked jazz, so we went with him to a jazz club, and it was also nice, and I ate really like super good food. In Florence they usually eat those big slabs of meat.
Okay.
But I don't like that much meat, so I never ordered it, because mm-hmm. like one serving is like 1 kilo.
Oh, wow.
1 kilo of meat. but I actually ate I can't remember the type of of noodles, but it was some kind of noodles with wild boar, mm-hmm. and it was really, really good. The ice creams are the best, but you have to be like really careful, because not every ice cream shop is good. Mm-hmm. So it's better to ask somebody where the good ice cream shop
and
is.
And did you have some? Are there any trips involved in terms of sightseeing?
So they recommended. So they had this trip to Chianti. Mm-hmm. It was for wine tasting. But I didn't go because I don't drink, so.
Okay.
And the other one was to go to Pisa, but instead I went to Siena, mm-hmm. because I found it like more interesting than just one tower.
So there is some flexibility in terms of your choice and what you get
do. Yeah, also because like you can be absent one day. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes to the first course, I was present the whole, like all the 5 days, but the second course wasn't that much of a big deal. Like, it was good, it's just...
It was things that you knew before.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. yes. I think it was Thursday, so we went to Siena. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was really fun.
Brilliant. Yeah. So, overall, you'd recommend
taking part
in some kind of courses like that?
Yeah.
And thank you for everything that you shared. You obviously did take away a lot from it, especially that resilience and well-being course.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.